everyone. I'm Amanda Belby, Managing Editor at Consultant360.com. PCSK9 inhibitors are essential for lowering low-density lipoprotein cholesterol and therefore cardiovascular disease risk. Guidelines from the AACE, ACE emphasize lower LDL-C targets and recommend PCSK9 inhibitors as a way to achieve these targets. Here with us today to speak about how PCSK9 inhibitors revolutionize lipid-lowering therapy is Dr. Seth Baum, who is the president of the American Society for Preventive Cardiology and a cardiologist at Preventive Cardiology, Inc. in Boca Raton, Florida. His analysis on PCSK9 inhibitors was recently published by the American College of Cardiology. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Baum.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So to start, how are PCSK9 inhibitors different from other medications in its class?
I think that's a great question. I enjoyed hearing you say that they're revolutionary, the PCSK9 inhibitors, because they really are. In fact, I consider them to be the greatest advance in lipid-lowering therapy in the last three decades. So I think they really are truly a revolutionary change in our ability to lower LDL cholesterol and thereby decrease the risk of heart attack, stroke, and death. So PCSK9, or proprotein convertase subtilisin kexin type 9, is the ninth in the series of these proproteins. And just as a background for the audience, PCSK9 is made in the liver. It's made in the endoplasmic reticulum as a five-component proprotein. It's released as a zymogen, which means it has to undergo autocleavage, which it does, and the top two components are cleaved. One of them, however, comes back on itself and blocks the catalytic site of this proprotein. So when PCSK9 is released into the blood, it no longer has enzymatic function. It no longer can undergo catalysis with any protein, and it solely binds. And what it binds are the LDL receptors on the surface of the liver, the liver cells, the hepatocytes. So what does that do? So the LDL receptors are an integral part of LDL metabolism. And the way that we metabolize LDL is the LDL particles that are floating around in our blood have a protein on their surface called ApoB, and that protein has a small component that will bind to the LDL receptor. When it binds to the LDL receptor, the entire complex is taken intracellularly, goes into what's called an endosome, the pH will drop, and the two segments will separate, where the receptor actually recycles to the surface of the hepatocyte, and the LDL particle goes to a lysosome for degradation. So you kill off the LDL particle, but you save the LDL receptor under normal circumstances. The LDL receptor can recycle 100 or 150 times, bringing LDL out of the bloodstream for degradation, which is what's supposed to happen. So I told you that PCSK9 will bind that LDL receptor. So what happens when that occurs? Well, if the LDL receptor is bound by PCSK9, and an LDL particle comes in and binds to a different site on the LDL receptor. Now, all three components are taken intracellularly. They go into the endosome, the pH drops, and remember, the LDL receptor is supposed to separate from the LDL particle, but it doesn't, because PCSK9 serves as kind of a glue, increasing the affinity of the receptor to the particle, the LDL particle, by about 100, 150 fold. This means that all three components end up being sent to the lysosome for degradation, and you lose the opportunity for the LDL receptor to recycle and thereby bring in more LDL particles for degradation. So what happens in our blood? LDL goes up. And the interesting thing here is that the gene for PCSK9 was identified in 2003, and shortly thereafter, different genetic states were identified with different mutations or single nucleotide polymorphisms. There were some that created what's called loss of function for PCSK9. In other words, it wasn't as effective. And those people tend to have low LDL cholesterol and a low risk of heart disease. On the contrary, people who have gain-of-function mutations, have very active PCSK9 or a lot of PCSK9, they have very high LDL cholesterol, and they have high heart disease. And in fact, they can have familial hypercholesterolemia. This is one of the genes that can cause familial hypercholesterolemia. So we learned a lot about PCSK9 with identification of those different mutations, and we learned how very important PCSK9 is in the metabolism of LDL cholesterol. And it became a great therapeutic target. And there are a number of companies that started doing research on PCSK9, and in 2007, the crystal structure was identified by scientists from research companies. And by 2010, clinical trials were ongoing. And then in the summer of 2015, the FDA approved two PCSK9 inhibitors, which are human monoclonal antibodies to PCSK9 for the treatment of elevated LDL cholesterol, specifically in the setting of familial hypercholesterolemia or atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease on maximally tolerated statin therapy when the LDL goal could not be reached.
What is its role in lowering LDL-C?
So PCSK9 inhibitors have a very different mechanism of action from other agents that lower LDL cholesterol. For example, the statins block HMG coenzyme A reductase. They're an inhibitor of that enzyme. They lower intracellular levels of cholesterol. PCSK9 inhibitors don't do that. And when the statins lower intracellular levels of cholesterol, that upregulates LDL receptors on the surface of the hepatocyte. Now, PCSK9 inhibitors do increase receptors, but not by lowering intracellular levels of cholesterol. They're also very different from ezetimibe, which blocks a particular receptor in the small bowel called the Niemann-Pick C1-like-1 receptor, thereby decreasing the absorption of cholesterol, both cholesterol that's consumed and the cholesterol that's undergoing enterohepatic circulation, which represents most of the cholesterol in the gut. So you can see it's a very different mechanism of action, and these drugs are very, very effective. They're very reproducible in their effect, and on top of maximally tolerated statin therapy, they reduce LDL cholesterol by about 60%.
Were there any challenges associated with the FDA's decision to approve PCSK9 inhibitors?
Yes, and I think that's a great question because things have actually continued to evolve over the last several years, and even since 2015 when two PCSK9 inhibitors were approved by the FDA. And there was debate because although these drugs were found to be extremely effective agents to reduce LDL cholesterol, the question was, what about outcomes? Would they also reduce heart attack, stroke, and cardiovascular death? And those outcome trials had not been performed at that point. There were two ongoing outcomes trials that had not yet been reported. So that was the debate. You know, was this going to translate into a reduction in events? So since that time, I'll tell you, there's much more evidence that has accumulated that has shown that LDL causally is related to vascular disease. What I mean by that is we used to talk about the LDL hypothesis, right? The hypothesis was that LDL, we knew, was associated with coronary artery disease and stroke, but we didn't know whether it was causal. Just like gray hair is associated with heart attack, it is not causal. It's just that people who are older tend to have gray hair, and people who are older tend to have heart attacks. So that's the association part of things, but we needed to prove causation. So since that time, there have been a number of Mendelian randomization studies that have clearly demonstrated that LDL causes vascular disease. We need to get away from LDL hypothesis and start talking about the LDL truth. So if the scientists and others who were looking at the approval process for the PCSK9 inhibitors in 2015 had fully embraced the LDL fact, I don't think there would have been much debate about including these drugs in our armamentarium.
And despite their approval, PCSK9 inhibitors were prescribed to significantly fewer patients than expected. Why? And what barriers to access did healthcare providers face?
Well, there have been enormous barriers to access. And in fact, prior to the approval of these drugs, there were groups that published findings suggesting that large numbers of people would be placed on the PCSK9 inhibitors in the first year after their approval. It turned out that only 1.2% of those who they had assumed would be on drug were actually prescribed drug. So there were a couple of things that occurred. Number one, fewer prescriptions were written. But much more significantly, the prescriptions that were written were denied by the payers, denied even over 80% in some studies by payers. So that got a number of us concerned, and we started looking into the issue and trying to understand why denial rates were so high. The drug is a costly drug, but is on formularies. And so being on formularies, if a physician prescribes a drug, the drug is supposed to be given to the patient as long as the physician is prescribing according to the PI, the drug's PI. At the American Society for Preventive Cardiology, which I'm current president, we started an initiative in which we collaborated with other groups such as ACE, that you just mentioned, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, the FH Foundation, the National Lipid Association, and others, to try to understand this phenomenon. We held a series of town halls at different meetings like the American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology, the American Society for Preventive Cardiology, the Preventive Cardiology Nursing Association. So a number of different groups in order to understand what was going on and then also to find solutions and publish our findings. And what we found was that there seemed to be no rhyme or reason, quite frankly, no clear reason why people were being denied. In fact, when looking at statin therapy or high-dose statin therapy or the use of ezetimibe or even dual antiplatelet therapy, which is really a very good proxy for ASCVD, one of the indications for the drug, there was no difference in those who were denied or those who were approved for drug. So it's, again, no clear reason why the denial rates were so high, except for the fact that it's a costly drug. That's the only thing we could conclude. We published our findings in Clinical Cardiology in March of 2017 with a single-page prior authorization and a single-page appeal letter, and that's available open access for anybody who wants to see that and use that to help get access for their patients who meet criteria for the PCSK9 inhibitor. So it's a very, very tricky and confusing area, a lot of ongoing attention and research regarding why these barriers are set so high.
So what patient population should be receiving PCSK9 inhibitors?
The PCSK9 inhibitors are indicated for patients who have either clinical ASCVD or familial hypercholesterolemia, who are on maximally tolerated statin therapy and still require a greater reduction in LDL cholesterol. So you have to parse that out to define those terms in order to really understand who should or should not be on a PCSK9 inhibitor. And we did that in that clinical cardiology paper, by the way, and we all agreed on five very key definitions. The most difficult one possibly is on maximally tolerated statin therapy, because there are a number of patients who are statin intolerant. And so the question becomes, do they qualify? And the answer we arrived at was that on maximally tolerated statin therapy means the highest dose statin an individual patient can tolerate, even if that dose is zero. So yes, a statin intolerant patient can qualify, but there is a very important stipulation, and that is that the statin intolerant patient also have clinical ASCVD or familial hypercholesterolemia and require a greater reduction in LDL cholesterol. So a greater reduction in LDL cholesterol also was difficult to define. And what we did was we said, okay, every clinician has a different approach when it comes to guidelines. And for example, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists came out with new extreme risk guideline this year, suggesting that extreme risk patients have an LDL under 55. That was the first time that happened. So if you're somebody who wants to follow those guidelines, fine. Then that, you know, and your patient meets the criteria, then use those guidelines. If you prefer the ACCHA guidelines, use those. So that's how we left it up to people to use the guidelines that they favor. Those two aspects of the definition, I think, were the most difficult, and I think looking at it that way can be most helpful.
Definitely. And how has access to these drugs changed since their approval in 2015?
First of all, there was a clinical trial that came out called FOURIER that looked at evolocumab in patients with vascular disease. And the trial was a positive study showing a significant reduction in the endpoint, which was heart attack, stroke, and cardiovascular death. So one would think that after having a successful trial, that approvals would go up. But the latest research that I have seen has shown that approvals have actually declined a bit. So the denials continue to be problematic. They're very, very high. They vary by state. They vary by payer. And they can vary quite significantly, in fact. I've seen some payers' approval numbers of in the 20s and others' approvals in the 80s. And you can flip that for denials. There's a huge variation in access to these drugs, which has not improved.
So what do you think the future holds for PCSK9 inhibitor usage in the U.S.?
That's another very important and very difficult question, because in my view, certainly if price were not an issue, these drugs would be very widely used. They have a very predictable and a very intense lowering of LDL cholesterol. So since we know that lower LDL cholesterol is better, and the longer that LDL cholesterol is low, the better still, we would be using this drug quite a lot. Price, though, is an issue. So something has to happen whereby the payers and the pharmacy benefit managers that really, you know, manage a lot of drug distribution in the country talk with the pharmaceutical companies and somehow have, number one, greater transparency about pricing, but also arrive at a position where we clinicians have the ability to access these medications for our patients when it's appropriate. And right now we don't. So my hope is it'll get better, I guess, in answer to your question.
So if you could leave our audience with one piece of advice, what would it be?
First of all, I would say embrace the fact that LDL causes vascular disease and understand that LDL is not the same as cholesterol. Yes, every cell in our body does require cholesterol. Our brain is very cholesterol dependent, but the brain does not ever see LDL particles. The brain makes its own cholesterol, and every cell in the body has the capacity to manufacture its own cholesterol. LDL in the human is a carrier of cholesterol that should be destined for destruction. So lower LDL is better. That does not mean that you're lowering the cholesterol in your cells, though. Okay, so that's very important. That's the first part of my answer. Understand that LDL is causal, not to worry about getting LDL low. It's a good thing to do. And the second thing when it comes to the PCSK9 inhibitor is, if you have a patient who qualifies for a PCSK9 inhibitor and whose insurance shows that the drug is on formulary and you prescribe it, first of all, I would use our single-page prior authorization in the Clinical Cardiology Journal. I think that is very helpful. I would use those five definitions. If you get denied, I would use the appeal letter, but I would go further. I would always get the patient involved in access, because the patient has the loudest voice here. The patient should contact their payer and say, hey, my doctor has prescribed this drug, and I'd like it, so please prove it. Now, that may sound silly, but it is actually a very important step. If after doing that, and if after having a peer-to-peer conversation after multiple denials, you're still denied, always remember that there's an insurance commissioner in every state, and you can always contact the insurance commissioner and send your case for review, because sometimes that'll get the patient the drug that the patient requires. So in sum, it's don't ever stop trying. Just keep trying. It's worth it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again for speaking with us today, Dr. Baum.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure.